It's a very good morning to one of the leading lights of Indigenous music in this country. A very good morning to Kev Carmody. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Greg.
Yeah, look, Kev, to take us back a little bit, you know, way back to the start, you know, people get a bit rusty in their memory and we need refreshing some of the things that you've achieved along the way. Before we get up to the concert where you're going to be here in Cairns, to tell us a bit of the journey for as a young fella.
Oh, well, the thing is, Greg, I was born in Cairns. Mum and Dad went back up there. Dad worked in the Mulgrave Sugar Mill, but old grandfather, he was born in the bush there before the turn of the 20th century, in the middle of Lakefield National Park, north of Laura.
Yeah, yeah.
Breeze of Plains, that's where he was born. That's Lama Lama country.
Yeah.
And then Mum, she come from Bunjalung country, which is all that Ballina, Byron Bay, northern New South Wales, Lismore. And then we were up there for 4 years, and then we moved back down to southern Queensland. Dad had a little block of land that he used to lease off the government, and that acted as our base for the droving horses. And, you know, we had milking cows and a few, droving horses and stuff there. And then that's how we used to do that sort of stuff. Dad did fencing, he did, you know, mustering, and all that sort of stock work we did.
It's funny, you know, Kev, you mentioned that. I was just thinking about my dad the other day and his lifetime. You know, he's seen pack horses as a form of transport, and other horses, obviously, with a sulky and dray and that kind of thing. And from that, aeroplanes and the internet and all these sorts of things, all in one lifetime.
That's dead right. And look, Greg, I think I pulled out of the music industry, 18, 20 years ago. I've been saying it at the concerts I've been doing. We've got to record that oral history.
Yeah.
We've got to get onto the National Library and say, look, there's got to be a whole program to record all that history, because that's part of my thing. I mean, for the first 3 years droving, from 1950 to about 1953, that's all we had was pack horses.
Yeah.
Your whole home was on the back of the pack horse. That's why we couldn't carry a guitar, but old uncle had the mouth organ.
Yeah, guaranteed. Yeah.
Sort of thing. And that's complete change in Australian society, from the horse and dray and the horse and buggy through to mechanisation, was phenomenal. By the time I got to the 1970s, but I didn't go to school when I was 10, so it was all that 6 or 7 years was spent roving in the bush. We were so skilled as horsemen and musterers and drovers and trackers. And then all of a sudden mechanisation come along and, you know, cattle trucks and stuff like that. We had to reskill ourselves then, and I wound up, we had so much labour and work them days, stick picking and flaming, cutting cane and wool pressing and bag lumping. You used to get paid per bag sewing, the wheat bag.
I don't remember them ones, 180 pound.
Yep, you bet. We carried hundreds of them a day on your back. And that's why fellas back buggered. And that forced us onto the fringes of the towns. Then we had I went onto the wheat board as a silo operator, operating, the silos. And then I wound up in the welding sheds, welding.
Yeah, yeah. Kev, you spoke about preserving oral history.
Yep.
I've been thinking of it of recent times, actually. So much is slipping through our fingers, so to speak. And, there's going to be a bit of a gap, I would imagine, in generations where, some of the younger ones not too interested in that kind of thing for a generation or two. But the Inuit in out of Canada, they found there that after two or three generations like that, the young ones come back and they were just treasuring everything that had been saved. So maybe we need to be looking, how they got the Stockman's Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But we need a museum, not where stuff's all locked away, where most of the stuff is today, but a museum where things are available to the public, where young kids can go and sit down in a little booth somewhere and hear that story of Kev Carmody's got to tell about the pack horse days, for instance. You know what I mean? Johnny cake and dry salty corned beef and damper and all that went with it,
Well, that's what I'm going to sing a song called Droving Woman. It's about eight minutes long, and it puts about four stories into one.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You're dead right. That oral history has got to be an educational resource.
Yeah.
For all students.
Yeah.
You know, and instead of having, you know, non-Indigenous people writing academic books that we then got to go and study about ourselves and our own identity.
Yeah, yeah.
Rubbish, you know, and the National Library does have an oral history section, but it's only tiny. And, you know, it's more than history. It's a whole, cultural evolution of our mob. You know, from that horse and buggy, or even the hunter-gatherer like our grandfather was, through to, now when they're putting people on the moon.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing is that, you know, it doesn't need to be a museum with things that, you know, just so locked away. You can't access anything. It's got to be like the Stockman's Hall of Fame. It's interactive. You actually have an experience when you go there. And beyond that, instead of, you know, writing children's books, you know, the oral history was never kept in a book. The whole idea, it needs to be passed on, so it's got to be recorded, and somebody needs to listen to it to then pass it on again to the next person. So these oral recordings need to be available, you know, even if you only got to pay $2 to walk away with a disc these days, or a digital something or other, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And like you got the visual image these days too that you can put together with the aura one. Like we see it all the time on NITV. You got NITV up there?
Yeah.
Well, like, and that way, you know, we can see our mob here in Australia and all the, you know, different sort of areas, but then you can see the overseas mob as well. You know, what's happening around the world, and there's so many similarities, Grip. So many similarities. And the same sort of things happening all over the place. But as you say, that positive bit of after a few, you know, generations, this real, journey to back to reclaiming the stuff is so positive.
And young children can come out with a new sense of identity.
Well, that's right. That's right. Like everything evolves. You know, that nothing stays the same, you know, nailed to the floor. it's cyclical, and, you know, it's a spiral, eh?
Yeah, and that's why, you know, Indigenous people of this land have survived, you know, maybe 100,000 years because of the ability to adapt and change.
Yep. How many ice ages did we go through?
Yeah.
You know, it's not the same. Like, you still get stories and songs up there on the Cape about, you know, when the land was on fire.
Yeah.
And you could have ceremony out on that island that's, you know, 3 kilometres off the coast because you could walk there.
Yeah.
Because of the ice age thing.
Yeah.
It's still in the old tradition.
And the songs that were stories that were traded, like the Red Dog, you know, went right down the east coast. That story.
Oh, and look at the song lines, Greg.
Yeah.
You know, there's one that runs from the Gulf right through to Port Augusta. From Broome.
Yeah.
Right down to South Australia.
Yeah.
You know, there was a tremendous flaming, cultural sort of, export across the country on the song line.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me it's exciting, you know, for people to rediscover it.
Well, the thing is that when people went to those increased centres, you know, things were increased, and modern-day people have a fair bit of trouble understanding what happened at those particular places and how all the song lines worked, and it's only probably now people are starting to catch up just a little bit. In fact, it was Western culture that is behind that needs to do the catching up.
Yeah, well, look, I'll tell you, Greg, only 2 days ago, 3 or 4 days ago, I got a call from Idaho in America, and this woman, she's an English woman, and she works for the BBC, worldwide BBC radio network, and she's fascinated with our concept of country music and how music is tied geographically to each sort of area. and she's coming across here, you know, organising a trip so that, and she's like, for an English person to be so interested in the intricate way that we our music moved and how it's developed today, she's coming across here to Flamen and do a program on it.
And yeah,
as I said to her, and as you know, the Broom Mob, Pickering Brothers, they got a real geographic sound to their music.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, East Arnhem Land Mob got a real different sound.
Yeah, yeah.
That's York Mob, you know, Cairns Mob, different sound. Desert Mob, different sound.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's still blackfella music.
Exactly.
And it's got this regional tie to the word, to the feel of the music, to the sound of the music. And that's what she's blown out with it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it takes somebody from outside overseas over there to come here and realise it. So, we know it.
So true. And like I say, it's the Western world that's doing the catching up and having the education now and is thirsty for something that hasn't been really available in the Western world to them. So they've come looking in other places. And like, oh, man, I know from the Kimberley to pass over, and he was talking about the tourists, and he said they come over like an empty 44-gallon drum. He said, we fill them up with spirit and send them home.
That's a great way. And look, see, that's another way. Us with lyrics.
Yeah.
Those word images.
Yeah, yeah.
That I was, I never went to school till I was 10. And you, if you wanted something to stick in somebody's head, Greg, eh?
Yeah.
You have to have that word image.
Exactly.
Like you fill him up that 44-gallon drum. It sticks in your head, doesn't it?
It stuck in mine forever. Yeah, yeah. As if I want to describe to somebody how it works, well, that's the phrase I use. Yeah.
Well, that's right. That's the great part of our oral tradition, and it turns up in our music.
Yeah, speaking of, we haven't talked too much about music at all, actually, come to think of it. Speaking of music, Kev, you've had a long history in this country with some songs that made their mark. When you come to Cairns, you're going to give us some of the old ones as well?
Oh, God, sure.
Yeah.
Only about a third will be the new stuff because it was all recorded music.
Yeah.
12 or 15 people, Greg, to put him on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will play, some from the new four album thing. But yeah, no, the old ones, they wouldn't let me get off stage unless I did that shot. Little thing. Okay, here we go, cook on me. And I just do it with the guitar and the old ditch.
Yeah, yeah, well, it's simplest is the best, I always say. And we've got away from the simplicity of it all. Wouldn't mind a pair of sticks in there, probably would go well as well. But apart from that, we've got away from, the real core of what the song is all about. And we sometimes put, you go into a studio and put overlay after overlay, and then you can't hear the real thing.
You're dead right, Greg. And I mean, that's why I started off, because we recorded in this old Andy's big old disused fruit packing shed.
Yeah.
I said, I don't want a drum kit, I don't want a bass guitar.
Yeah.
We're going to use all these bits of timber and flame and drums and stuff laying around here as our drum kit.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll make up our own instruments. We'll record the birds, put the recorder out on the fence post, before daylight. Got all the bird calls. We recorded the dog howling, the chooks.
Yeah.
So you get an organic sound.
Yes, something real. I went into the studio with a fellow once, and they wanted him to do, separation. So they put his voice track down to his guitar track, and this bloke, he was no chance. He was absolutely a great, great singer. Yeah. And I said to the producer, I said, I want you to do something for me. I said, we're paying for this gig for the time. I want you to record him voice and guitar together. But he goes, oh, no, we can't get separation. I said, forget the separation. Yep. Just get the man and his guitar. That's what we're paying for.
Dead right, and that's what I said to Andy. No rehearsal, Andy. No pre-production.
Yeah.
I want to walk in and put the cans on.
Yeah.
And I just want to improvise, and if it's no good, we cut it out.
Exactly. Yeah, simple as that. Yeah.
Yep.
Fantastic. Look, what date you landing in Cairns now?
Oh, God, I think it's a Friday, I don't know. You fellas should.
Yeah, yeah, I got it there somewhere, but I only got one tiny piece of paper that says Kev Carmody interview 11:40.
Oh, that's all I got written on my end. I got Greg Reed though on my end.
That's all the questions I had. The rest of them were in my head, you see.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, you know, if I need questions to go in to do an interview with Kev Carmody, I better give the game away, you know.
Well, that's right. We use radio in a different way and it's more positive. It's like a big open telephone, isn't it?
Isn't it?
It's like the old telephone when the switchboard operator...
I'll sort the dates out and let listeners know when they might want to... So people might want to travel from the Cape because we broadcast right up to the top there to the NPA. So I'll sort the dates out and all you have to do is keep your end of the bargain and turn up, okay?
Okay, I think I can do that.
Right. Right, Kev. Thanks so much for yarning with us, eh?
Thanks, Greg. And say hello to all the mob for us up there. You know, we're thinking of you all.
No worries.